Welcome back to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and this is the second half of our hour-long show. And let's get into some commentary by Oak. Oak is a guy who's been doing commentary for us for quite a while, and this is his latest offering called Up, Up, and Away.
I've just returned from the Atlantic coastline, where long, solitary walks on the beach are far too often spoiled by encounters with half-deflated balloons stranded on the beach. Some have messages such as Rock 101 WGIR FM, or Marty Golden, our voice in City Council, or Dollar Dry Dock Real Estate makes the difference. Others just sit there mute on the sand. Out on the water, though, some are mistaken for jellyfish when they land on the ocean's surface and are ingested by endangered sea turtles and other marine life, often becoming lodged in their stomachs or intestines and eventually killing them. The balloons that don't kill our fellow inhabitants simply become airborne trash, junk for other people to pick up. Now I ask you, what kind of memento is that? Perhaps a fitting one. Everyone loves a pageant, a big show, even a seemingly solemn ceremony. But few like to clean up afterwards. We don't often think about the consequences of our actions, especially when they are wed to special occasions. Celebrations call for a certain be-here-now attitude. We mustn't be party poopers. It's only just this once, or it only comes once a year, repeated endlessly through the ages. This observer, on the contrary, is avowed party pooper. So many of our celebrations are so contrived and pretentious as to be a sort of embarrassment. A heartfelt prayer or song is a significant act. A balloon release is gaudy theatrics, often bringing encumbrance, if not harm, to others. And how many Taste of the City events feature giant pizzas or omelets, most of which, I'll wager, go to waste in an age of malnourishment and starvation? Let them eat cake. For years, I never missed a 4th of July fireworks display, but now we find, when you add them all together, it's a major source of air pollution, just like war. I want to take this opportunity to invite you to a celebration of the ocean, the earth. You won't need to bring wads of cash or cameras or plastic plates and forks. There's no need of 100,000 colorful helium-filled balloons with commercial or political messages emblazoned on their sides. The sunrise and sunsets provide all the colors you will need. The ocean and the land provide the only stage necessary. All one needs to bring to this celebration is some respect, a little awareness of our actions, a sense that what goes up must come down. Well, anyway, that's the view from this oak for Earth First Radio.
And we thank Oak for his comments, and they're always appreciated. Oak's comments are a continuing feature on Earth First Radio. All right, let's get into more news here from England. With fields of shin-high wheat, a carpet of white daisies, wild clover underfoot, oaks overhead, Bob Fitterman's farm at the end of a winding lane bordering with hedgerows provides an unlikely political battleground. But that is what has become since Fitterman offered to devote some of his land to test the planting of seed crops that have been genetically modified, GM in the shorthand of the battle-hardened. He and three other farmers whose willingness to take part in the government-run trials was made public this month have been targeted by protesters who have already invaded other such plantings, trampling and ripping up roots and fields of oilseed rape, and maize. Quote, it's quite likely there will be some sort of direct action against the crops at some point, said Andrew Wood of the protest group Genetic Snowball. Quote, the public has made it clear they don't want GM crops, and there is no need for these tests. The protesters' act of destruction, while illegal and extreme, are an expression of the widespread opposition to the introduction of genetically modified crops in Europe and particularly in Britain. Genetic modifications of food has been a relatively unquestioned phenomenon in the United States and Canada, with altered ingredients in a wide range of processed food, from soft drinks to beer to breakfast cereals. It is also common in animal feeds and soy, corn, and cottonseed. But its arrival in Britain has set off alarms and united demonstrators from lapsed causes in a powerful protest movement against what they call Frankenstein food and the large multinational companies promoting it. There are no government agencies in Europe with the regulatory rigor of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to build consumer confidence, and government approval can arouse suspicion as much as it can provide reassurance. This is nowhere more evident than in Britain, where the public is sensitized to the outbreak of mad cow disease in 1966 and the government's tardy conclusion that it was something that could harm humans. Let's face it, there are a lot of considerations in Britain that don't apply elsewhere, Fiddeman said. The fact that we are an island, the fact that agriculture is not spread out across broad spaces but is close to inhabited areas, and the whole tradition here of wanting to keep land pure and unspoiled, even in conventional agriculture. Well, that's more news about genetic modification stuff. But here's something totally off the out of this world. This is Aerial Bombardment to Reforest the Earth by Paul Brown, environmental correspondent of the London Guardian. Forests are being to be created by dropping millions of trees out of aircraft equipment installed in the huge C-130 transport aircraft used by the military for laying carpets of landmines across combat zones has been adapted to deposit trees in the more remote areas of parts of Scotland. An idea originally from an RAF pilot, Jack Walters of Bridgnorth, Shropshire, has been developed by the U.S. manufacturer Lockheed Martin Aerospace so that 900,000 young trees can be planted in a day. A company set up to market the idea, Aerial Forestation Incorporated of Newton, Massachusetts, believes that companies with polluting power plants will be forced by governments to plant forests to offset the global warming effect of the carbon dioxide that they emit. And planting trees via C-130s could have the cost of manual methods. Peter Simons from Lockheed said equipment we developed for precision planting of fields of landmines can be adapted easily for planting trees. There are 2,500 C-130 aircraft in 70 countries, so the delivery systems for planting forests are widely available, mostly mothballed in military hangars waiting for someone to hire them. The possibilities are amazing. We can fly at 1,000 feet and 130 knots, planting more than 3,000 trees in a minute in a pattern across the landscape, just as we did with landmines. But in this case, each cone carries a sapling. That's 125,000 trees for each flight and 900,000 trees in a day. The tree cones are pointed and designed to bury themselves in the ground at the same depths as if they had been planted by hand. They contain fertilizer and a material that soaks up surrounding moisture, watering the roots of the tree. The containers are metal, but they rot pretty quickly, so the tree can put its roots in the soil. Moshe Alamaro of Aerial Forestation was in Bridgnorth last week visiting Dr. Walters, who published his idea in a paper 25 years ago while at the University of British Columbia in Canada. Dr. Alamaro said, "We are seriously considering contacting British royalty and recommending that Jack is also knighted. It was a great idea, which he tested at the time and found it worked, but the technology was not up to the job. With metal that biodegrades at once as it hits the soil, we are planting the trees and giving them a head start all at once." And let's see. One of the areas we are interested in is the Scottish Mountains, which used to be forested and could be again. We have already talked to landowners, and they are a bit worried about local resistance because people have gotten used to seeing the hills bare of trees, but we could replant the native forests very quickly. He said he also hopes to replant large areas of the Black Forest cut down during the Cold War to provide a line of sight across the Iron Curtain between East and West Germany, and is exploring contracts in North Africa, the tundra of Canada, Australia, and the U.S. In 5 years, he believes his company could be planting a billion trees a year, enough to reforest 3,000 square miles. And in California, the Forest Service plans a 23,000 acre backfire in prime salmon habitat. Forest activists from across the country are calling Brad Powell, the head forester for California Native Forest, in an effort to get him to stop the Forest Service from setting fire to 23,000 acres of the wilderness near the Trinity River in Northwest California. Plans for the backfire were announced this week by District Ranger Joyce Anderson at a community meeting near the small hamlet of Big Bar. Anderson claims the Forest Service must burn the wilderness to control a wildfire burning in the New River, a major Trinity River tributary. The New River rises in the Trinity Alps wilderness, then flows through unprotected wildlands to enter the Trinity near Big Bar. Felice Pace, a longtime activist from the Klamath Forest Alliance, has hiked and fished many times in the rugged New River watershed. According to Pace, the New River is wild country. There is no way the Forest Service can effectively control a backfire in that country. According to Pace, backfires are rarely effective in controlling fires, particularly in remote and wild terrain. Most of the people who live in the remote forest communities believe the Forest Service sets backfires so that there will be more opportunity to log once the rains come and put the fires out, said Pace. Quote, folks who don't know better support salvage logging after the fires, even in wildlands far from roads. They think the trees are dead, but most times lots of green trees are logged along with the black ones. So here's the, if you want more information, call Felice Pace at 530-467-5209. That's 530-467-5209. And let's see, I don't have, I don't believe I have any contact information for the Forest Service on this one, but call the Salmon Trinity National Forest, I guess. Brad Powell, head forester for the California National Forest, that's what it says. All right, from British Columbia, in a move that some say could spark Native Indian unrest across British Columbia, the West Bank First Nation asserted Tuesday what it says are its Aboriginal rights to logging Crown lands without the necessary provincial approval. At the head of the neighboring Penticton Band said the security force of 50 of its members is ready to block any attempt by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police or the Forest Ministry to halt the logging. Frustrated by months of provincial inaction, West Bank Chief Ron Derrickson ordered more than a dozen loggers into the Okanagan Forest Tuesday afternoon, citing a Supreme Court of Canada's Del Guamuku decision. We have basically all the Indians in British Columbia, along with some in Alberta and the Yukon, supporting us as we begin cutting our own Aboriginal lands, Derrickson said shortly after his men began falling timber. If they go in and try and stop us, this whole province is going to get shut down. Every other band is going to exercise its rights. I think it will be so widespread it will have an explosive effect. Numerous native groups are backing the West Bank band and say Tuesday's action could have widespread effects as other bands grow increasingly frustrated by lengthy treaty talks and the failure of the British Columbia government to recognize Aboriginal land titles. Chief Stuart Phillip, who heads the militant Penticton Band, as well as the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, said a security force of more than 50 of his own band members has been established and will move in if any provincial authority attempts to stop tree cutting. Quote, we would provide security by way of a blockade to deny access to any enforcement agency, either RCMP or forestry, said Phillip. To be honest, I'm a bit nervous. The provincial government is in complete disarray. When a government is so low in the polls, they could try and increase their popularity by coming in with a heavy hand. Forest Ministry spokesman Paul Lickhoff said the staff from Kamloops and Penticton District have been in touch with the West Bank band and intend to visit the logging site shortly. We're making arrangements for our compliance and enforcement staff to visit the site and we'll assess the situation, he said. We're going to see if they're cutting down a whack of trees or one. We don't know how much of an issue they've got going there. The logging is taking place about 20 kilometers northwest of West Bank, a community just across Lake Okanagan from Kelowna. The West Bank band claims the province has been unwilling to recognize native entitlement and has refused to allow the band to cut timber on land it has traditionally claimed. After 10 months of inaction and frustration, Derrickson said it was important for natives to assert their Aboriginal claim to the land. And let's keep bulldozers out of the Hatun Sacha Biological Station in Ecuador. Friends, we need your help to prevent road construction in our Amazon Biological Station. The provincial government of Napo is threatening to enter our reserve with bulldozers. Jatun Sacha Biological Station and Children's Second International Rainforest Reserve of 2,000 hectares is legal property of the foundation, but the provincial government is again planning to construct a road bisecting our reserve. The Jatun Saka Biological Station contains as many or more species than the United States. The Napo Provisional Government is considering constructing a road directly through the Jatun Sacha Biological Station, transecting over 4 kilometers of primary rainforest. The road would service 5 communities along the Arajuno and Puni rivers, tributaries of the Napo. The roads are a necessity for travel and commerce. However, the government has initiated and never completed 2 parallel roads within 8 and 12 kilometers of the proposed road. Completion and extension of one of the unfinished roads through Kisachoka would serve more than twice as many communities for an equivalent cost. Community people need access to transport their agricultural goods and reach professional help in emergencies. The Jatun Sacha Foundation supports technological advance and even road construction for our neighbors. However, the provincial government has recently bulldozed other road openings with no ability to finish their actions. We request that they first complete the Kisakokcha Road before bulldozing through our biological reserve. Established in 1985, the Jatun Sacha Biological Station protects 2,000 hectares. That's about 4,500 acres of one of the most diverse rainforest habitats on Earth. Numerous botanical and wildlife studies conducted have documented several of the world's of top worldwide species counts inside the small reserve: 120 mammals, 800 butterflies, and 540 bird species, as many as 250 tree species in 1 hectare alone, and over 2,000 plant species in 20 square kilometers. Unfortunately, no other reserve in Ecuador protects rainforests located in the small belt of wet tropical rainforest, which connects the Andes mountain range and the Amazon River Basin. The National Park System of Ecuador has no plans to establish reserves in the small threatened area of lowland wet rainforest, which is recognized as an international conservation hotspot due to the incredible diversity and rapid destruction of the private forests. Jatun Sacha Biological Station is at risk of a possible extinction of various endemic species if the road is constructed and utilized, since it will bisect the biological station. They're asking folks to write to Dr. Edison Chavez, C-H-A-V-E-Z, Provincial Government of Napo, N-A-P-O, Consejo Provincial del Napo, in Tena, Ecuador. And here's a fax number, 593-6-887-495. And I believe from the United States you'll need to dial 011-593-6-887-495. And the email address for the Ecuadorian Ministry of the Environment, MMA, at ambiente.gob.ec. That's MMA at ambiente.gob.ec. And let's hope those folks can get some support down there in Ecuador for their rainforest reserve. And check this out. Since the 1980s, scientists estimate as much as 400,000 acres of virgin forest on Alaskan native lands, an area about half the size of Rhode Island, has been clear cut. The logging was fueled by partnerships between 24 for-profit Alaskan Native American corporations eager to convert some of their natural resources into cash, and timber companies seeking refuge from tightened restrictions on federal land. In one deal, the Tatalex sold the timber on about 10,000 acres along one side of an inlet to the east, Port Fidalgo, for $400,000. The buyer was another native corporation called Chugach Alaska, which formed a joint venture to run logging operations mainly for City Four Incorporated, a Seattle-based timber firm. The price was low, timber experts say, but generated a tax loss that the Tatalex also sold for another $2 million or so. And as the rest of the world focused on the Exxon Valdez spill in 1989, the Tatalex trees began to fall. The company City 4, which was logging on native lands freed from many regulations, opted to clear cut rather than to log selectively or to thin out stands. From a practical point, clear cutting is the only way you can harvest that much timber, says Bob Rice, then a City 4 vice president. By the way, City 4 is a wholly owned subsidiary of a CITC, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Chinese government. CITC owns 37 companies, including CITC Hong Kong Holdings Limited, the Kawa Bank Limited in Hong Kong, and those in the United States, Canada, Australia, and Germany. CITIC has also opened its representative offices in Tokyo, New York, and Frankfurt to strengthen its business ties in forest countries. CITIC Canada's sister company is Citifor Incorporated, located in Seattle, Washington. Citifor Inc. is a wholly owned subsidiary of CITIC. It was founded in 1984. Citifor's business is primarily concentrated in the timber industry, with investments in timber and timberlands in Washington, Oregon, Alaska, Chile, and Russia. And in other news, CITIC Pacific is a red chip rip off the old communist bloc, a subsidiary of one of China's state-owned trust and investment corporations, CITIC, Pacific Invest in Infrastructures, Aviation Civil Engineering Projects, Power Generation, Telecommunications, Property and Trading and Distribution Firms, along with a handful of property developers. CIT Pacific owns a portion of Lantau Island, proposed site of Walt Disney's planned Hong Kong theme parks. Want to read a little news here from the White House. In an unusual show of force, more than 20 environmental groups throughout Spotted Owl Country have banded together to demand an overhaul management practices in federal forests. The group signed off on an open letter to President Clinton that calls for a permanent ban on road construction and logging in unprotected wilderness and an immediate moratorium on land exchanges until that process is reformed. They also call for investment of public funds in restoration of federal forests instead of logging them. And that's it for the news today. To get news, announcements, or comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send your letters, donations, CDs, or cassettes to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California 95061. And be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. For more in-depth news and information about the Earth First Movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal there at P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon 97440. Earth First Radio is broadcast live on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM every Thursday at 8 p.m., where you can listen to Earth First Radio anytime on your computer on the World Wide Web. Just point your browser at radioforall.web.net. That's http://radioforall4.web.net. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need is free on their website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations, including Radio Free Cascadia and Austin Free Radio. If you found us on the web, ask your local station to download and rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you very much for listening, and please tune in again. We're going to go out here with a little campfire music from the Round River Rendezvous. I've been threatening to play this.
This me and Peg were talking, or maybe joking or something, that this rendezvous is pretty close to where Dave Foreman lives. So maybe he's here. Maybe it was just joking, though, but I know that he is here. He's just in disguise. So this is called Dave Foreman in Disguise. I was hiking through the San Juan Mounts around the rendezvous, thinking of all who've come and gone. What's there left to do? There's 20 years of history suddenly behind us, since five bold men in cowboy hats had long ago defined us. When I caught the scent of cigar smoke wafting through the breeze and stumbled on a porta potty stashed amongst the trees. Beside it stood a barbecue topped with cheeseburgers and steaks. And a flask of gin and tonic, like I've heard Nancy makes. Well, I found nature calling. Ahem. I opened the door and had to gag. There I found Dave Foreman taking a dump beneath the American flag. Foreman jumped in shock at this unsolicited relation. I said, "Excuse me, Mr. Foreman, but this deserves an explanation." Well, Dave said, "Rendezvous so close to home, and I was on the edge of tears. I miss you all sometimes. It's been too many years. Though I wake up scared at night, Earth First still feels appealing. I had to come to cleanse my soul. I had to come for healing." I asked Dave what he thought about this movement's reaction, but Foreman said, "Hush, hush, gnome. This visit's called a covert action. Don't tell." I pondered what that meant. Then I couldn't believe my eyes. Foreman donned a skirt and tie-dye as part of his disguise. He put patchouli in his underarms and wore a t-shirt of the dead. then put a wig of dreadlocks above his balding head. Dave said they'll never know and made me promise not to tell. We'll be hanging out in next year's rendezvous as well. Well, the light was getting dimmer and the mosquitoes started stinging. Foreman headed off to the campfire to join along with Daryl singing. So when there's a hippie talking next to you, don't listen to his lies. Just whisper in his ear, "Hey, you're Dave Foreman in disguise."
What are you calling it?
What's that? The what? Roots of woo-woo.
The roots of woo-woo. This is how we got woo.
But it's all scattered, and Gene Crawford corrected me on my historical inaccuracies. But this part I got right, so I'll read it.
Okay.
It goes like this. At a long-ago rendezvous back in 1983, Bill Duvall was leading new workshops. He called Deepecology. He taught instinct over logic is our new way of seeing and praised the intrinsic value of all life and being. There is wisdom in his teachings and truth on his breath. There is only one problem. Duvall could bore us to death. For the wild is more than an academic study. What's there to do with this collegiate fuddy-duddy? We needed religion as real as the rivers and stones to take us out of our intellects and into our bones.
Yeah.
A new spirituality to break free of our tethers. When over the horizon came a man. What a man. In a loincloth and feathers. He wore turquoise beads and an old buckskin vest and a long Viking mustache that hung to his chest. He called himself Lone Wolf Circles, such an elegant name, and said he contained a wolf spirit no one could tame. Well, the movement needed a visionary and needed a drummer. Way, way back when, on that long ago summer, when the rally got going, Wolf jumped at the chance. On that sacred moment, Wolf was known to get Bill Duvall to dance. So then it blabs on with my historical inaccuracies, and Foreman tells Wolf to proselytize everything, and Wolf does his first road show. With a rhinestone cowboy from California. He called himself Dakota Sid. Wolf preached to hippies and pagans and heathens of every conceivable kind. This wasn't the outreach Dave Foreman had in mind. We could feel our mouths growing fangs and our backs getting hairy. And Wolf was a poet without non-genderic vocabulary. He pounded ceremonial beats and sounded tribal horns. There were candles and pentacles and even unicorns. Dakota Sid was off his Prozac, and it all got too wacky. Enough to make a redneck choke on his tobacco. Sid stuttered so hard he couldn't get the words through. I've been here. I've been there, but I hain't never seen none of this. Wah, 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 woo, woo. Then woo, woo was coined by this guitar strumming gringo and became a sacred word in the New Earth First lingo. Then it goes on to my historical inaccuracy.
You have to tell us.
The one about Wolf's Willie.